Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we'll do the interim week before we break, because we skipped over a story. The way that we learned the binding of Isaac, we started with his birth and the expulsion of Ishmael, and then we went to the binding of Isaac. What we missed in between all of those various stories was the episode of Sodom. We missed a couple of episodes. One of them is the destruction of Sodom. That took place, if you recall, in one of the very first stories that we had read about is when Abram was promised he was going to have a child. And then the angels come to visit him after his circumcision, and they tell him at that point that he will have that child. And they also, that's the story of the destruction of Sodom. That was one of the elements that, again, since we weren't going verse by verse, we were really doing topics, we ended up skipping over that story. So I thought that would be a nice little episode for the few weeks that we have together. Let's study that in depth. It's a story that most people are somewhat familiar with, and then as we've seen all the time, when we actually read it in depth, word by word, line by line, there is a lot of nuance, a lot of lessons the Torah has to teach us about this particular episode. I did not have time because I made a switch from the other topic that I originally was talking about to prepare the sheets. We'll do that in subsequent weeks, but we'll just start with Chumash. It's the same text anyways, even though it's not in our own sheet form. We'll start there, and we'll focus on this particular episode. So if you flip to page, open to page 80, 80 and 81, we will begin. There are actually two parts to this story as well. I figure we're really only going to do the first part. Let me give you the background of the episode and then the breakdown of the two parts, and we'll actually do the story. So again, the background is we just started. Abram has been given the commandment of his circumcision. He circumcises his older son, Ishmael, who's at the time 13 years old already, at the time of the commandment of circumcision. Abraham himself is now recovering. He's much older. He is in his... he's 80, correct. He was 99.
Oh, okay.
Right, he was 86, we had learned, when he had Ishmael. He's now 99 years old. He's recovering at the tent, it's hot, and Hashem sends him three angels in the guise of passers-by, traveling. The opening part of that story we are not going to do. That's where they say Abraham takes him in, and he feeds him, and they say, where is Sarah? She says she's back in the tent, and they say, you're going to have a child, and she... Laughs. We've seen this a little bit, right? That word laughter appears a lot in regards to Yitzchak. And Hashem says to Avram, why is Sarah laughing? And she says, well, I was only afraid. No, you laughed. That was that whole episode, which we are going to leave aside. What we are going to study is then what happens right after that. Right after that original dialogue between you're going to have a child, Sarah laughing, Hashem saying to Avram, why did Sarah laugh? She claiming that she was afraid. The story continues with Avraham and his guests. That's where we're going to have our dialogue in which Hashem is going to basically tell him that Sodom is going to be destroyed, and Avram tries to intercede on their behalf. That's part one of our story, which we're going to be focused on. Part two of the story is where the angels then actually go down to Sodom to destroy it, and that's where we have the whole episode in which Lot, Avram's nephew, takes them in and tries to save them, and then eventually the city gets destroyed and he runs and fathers two children with his two daughters in the cave. That's part two of the story of the destruction of Sodom. Most likely we're going to be focused on part one, which is Abraham's prayer trying to intercede on behalf of the people of Sodom, and we're going to read that inside as it takes place. So on page 80, or if you actually flip back one page just to give you again the context, in the beginning of chapter 18, on page 78-79, is the beginning of Parshas Vayera, and this is where Hashem appears to him in the plains of Mamre while he was sitting at the entrance of the tent in the heat of the day. This is where Avram is now recovering from the circumcision, which took place on the very previous page. If you want to even flip back long, you don't have to. Avram lifts his eyes, and he sees three men were standing over him. Now, this is an important, we're going to read this because we're going to have to find out like where in the context of our story when we pick up the story. The way the story begins is, in verse 1, what's taking place? Hashem is appearing to Abraham. And then in verse 2, Avram lifts up his eyes, and what did he see? Three men were standing over him, and he ran towards them, and he brings them into his home. If you find favor, please do not pass by. Come, let me take you in. So the verse began in the parsha begins in verse 1 with Hashem himself appearing to Avram. What does Hashem say to Avraham? What does he communicate to him in the plains of Mamre?
Right now,
a blank. It's like it's as if the story was cut off. Hashem appears to Avram in the plains of Mamre. He was sitting at the edges of the tent, and then the Torah goes off. Avram lifts up his eyes, and he sees other people coming. So, what happened in that? What did Avram and Hashem talk about? Anything? Right now, the Torah hasn't told us anything. This is one of the places where the sages see that Hashem had come to visit him and recover him, help him recover from the circumcision, because there is no other dialogue that's taking place. But we'll leave that on the table right now. Hashem has appeared to Avram and has, as of yet, said nothing. In the middle of this face-to-face visit, Avram sees his three visitors. He runs, he brings them in. And then the story begins, verse 6. Avram hastens to the tent, to Sarah, and he says, hurry up, let's get a meal. He runs to the cattle. They said to him in verse 9, flipping the page, where is Sarah? She's in the tent. He says, meaning the angel, the visitor, says, I will return to you at this time next year, and your wife, Sarah, she will have a son. Sarah is listening. Abraham and Sarah were old. Verse 12, Sarah laughs. After I have withered, shall I again have delicate skin? My husband is old. And Hashem speaks to Abraham. Why is Sarah laughing? Is anything beyond Hashem? At the appointed time, I will return to you at this time next year, and Sarah will have a son. And then we have now Hashem reiterating to Avram that which this passerby just said. Right? The passerby just said, you'll have a child. Now remember, Hashem himself has already promised this to Avram. We saw that earlier. Now, Avram doesn't necessarily know that it's an angel. This person passing by says it to Avram. Sarah laughs. Hashem himself now speaks to Avram. This is the first time we've seen Hashem speaking to Avram since he originally came to visit him. And he says, it's true indeed. Next year at this time, your wife Sarah will have a son. Verse 15, Sarah denies it, saying, I did not laugh, or she was frightened. But he said, no, you laughed indeed. Now, we could talk about this as well to talk about, but we're not going to be focused on that. That's where we're up to in the story. So where are we? Avram is in the tent speaking with his guests. He's in the middle of his speaking with his guests, having this conversation with Hashem at the same time. He tells him that he's going to have a son. The guests tell him he's going to have a son. There's this conversation taking place with Sarah. Right, we could try to work all that out and see like how exactly it's working, but that's where we are in our story. We are going to pick up in verse 16 until the end of the chapter, verse 33. So we're going to be doing about, what is that, 16, 17 verses. We'll do them in our normal manner. Let's go through the verses. Let's raise as many questions as we can just simply going through the text. I expect that none of you will be looking below that fine line separating the text from the commentary. Yeah, that line. We will be for the next, at least for today and for the beginning of next week, on top of the line. Let's go through the story. Let's go through the text. Let's raise as many questions as we possibly can, just trying to address and understand what's going on, and then we'll try to work through the way that Rashi, Rabban, maybe refresh again, how some of the commentators have seen the significance of the story, what it teaches us both about prayer and what it teaches us about Avraham as a Jew and his concern for the world around him. So let's take a look. Ready? Verse 16. So the men got up from there. Which men?
The angels.
Okay, so right, the angels who appear to be men to Avram, three of them, they get up from there and gazed down towards Sodom while Avraham walked with them to escort them. Comments, questions, what do we see in this verse?
Well, apparently they were on a mountaintop overlooking Sodom.
Okay, apparently.
Where did Avram walk to?
Okay, so let's start with your first comment. Clearly, they are overlooking Sodom, so that it could be said, and those who've been to Israel know that it's a land of hills and valleys, and you can stand on one hilltop and you can see lots of hills and other valleys in front of you. So they are in a place in which they are gazing down towards Sodom. They can see it from where they are, and it's clear that they put their gaze toward it. Now, I would ask a more basic question as to almost, what does it add to the pasuk? What are they doing? What was at the end of this pasuk? What's happening?
Well, Sarah.
No.
Abraham was showing more hospitality.
And they're leaving.
Yeah.
Right? They're done. The visit is over. Right? So the men got up from there. Let's take that phrase out. And then they take the middle phrase of the verse out. And the men got up from there, and Abram walked with them to escort them. What's going on in this verse? They're finished, right? They're taking their leave. They came, they visited. They were wined and dined by Abram and by Sarah. They gave him a message that he's going to have a child at this time next year. Sarah left, Hashem talked to Abram. And now they're finished. They get up, they leave, and Abram escorts them. So, hey, we see, parenthetically, how do you let your guest take leave? You escort them, right? We see that clearly here from Abram. He escorted his guest out. And there's a phrase in the middle which clearly is telling us something significant, that if you just were reading the text at this point, I wouldn't be sure what, that the guests, as they finished, looked down towards the dome. And it's like, we know this story. But if you were just reading the story for the first time, like here these pastors by, they're just, you know, wandering through, it's a hot day, they stop by, they get a bite to eat, they get up to leave, and the Torah tells us that before they did, not even that, it's actually in the middle of the story, they got up to leave, and Abram's going to escort them. In between them getting up to leave and Abram escorting them, they set their gaze upon Sodom. So clearly the Torah is pointing something significant out to us within that. Yeah?
I also wonder if the word down is telling us something, that it's a lower, Sodom is at a lower spiritual level than...
Okay, excellent. Now, the reality is, Art Scroll has, not purposely, but misled us.
Oh, so it's only dazed.
Let's look at the actual Hebrew. Vayakumu mishom ha'anashim. If you look in the Hebrew side in verse 16, tezayin, we'll try to translate this as literally as we can. We'll see where Art Scroll got their translation from. Vayakumu mishom ha'anashim. The man got up from there. Vayashkifu al pnei Sodom. That literally would mean vayashkifu means to gaze upon the face of Sodom. And they gazed upon the face of Sodom. Now, with that phrase, literally, you wouldn't necessarily say they were on a hilltop. And you wouldn't translate it as they gazed down. They, Art Scroll translates, gazed down towards Sodom, taking the phrase vayashkifu al pnei Sodom, on the face of Sodom. Which is interesting. Now, we're going to see, Rashi is going to make a comment, that vayashkifu generally has a language that implies something bad, something evil that's going to happen. It's a gazing of, you know, sometimes I can gaze, like the way, in English, I don't know if you'll tell me if this is so true, I'm thinking about it as I'm speaking, if I want to describe a loving gaze of a groom to his bride versus the sinister look that a murderer would gaze upon his victim, I don't know that I would use the same word, right? You know, gaze, I think, has more of that loving connotation. You know, a murderer trying to seek out his victim, maybe they set his gaze upon, but scoping out. There, you know, different words that we would use would imply. The word vayashkifu, the Hebrew word that's used to set their gaze upon, Rashi's going to point out, generally has a negative connotation. Something bad is either going to happen or something evil is in the works. That's the word that's used. So the fact that Art Scroll translates as gazed down towards Sodom is trying to capture that. But the word literally means they looked upon the face of Sodom. That's what it means. Either way, it's interesting that in the middle of them getting up and being escorted, the Torah takes the time to say that that's what these guests did. Now, if you're Abraham, would you, on your own, place any significance on the fact that these three nomadic passerbyers stood up to leave, looked over towards the dome, and then continued on their way?
I wouldn't.
Right, I mean, what?
They're just going on.
Looking for the next place to go. Sodom, as we'll see, was a very lush, lucrative place to live. It was in a valley that was filled with potential water and agriculture. So, you know, like the Torah is telling us something which from Abram's perspective would have seemingly very little significance. Let's continue on. And Hashem said, shall I conceal from Abraham that which I do? Vayom Hashem Omar, shall I conceal that which I do? Let's continue his whole phrase and we'll break it down. The Avraham Hayo Yihye L'Goy Gadol Ve'Atzum. Avraham is surely to become a great and mighty nation. The Nivrechu Vo Kol Goyei Ha'aretz. And all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him. Read one more verse. Ki yidatev, for I have literally known him. You'll notice that as our school translates the words ki yidatev, loved him. The word yodea means to know, right? It doesn't say ki ahavti. Doesn't say that I loved him. So let's stick with the literal translation. In other words, if we would have had our sheets in front of us, and I would have started like I like to do, with the most literal translation, then you never would have seen the words for I loved him. You would have said for I know him, because that's how we would have translated it literally. And if you notice, when we sometimes have the first printouts, on the top half is very different than the art scroll translation. First is much more of a literalist translation than art scroll. And art scroll, again, is not pulling any punches. What do they say in their introduction? They're translating according to Rashi's interpretation. They're not looking for a literal translation of the text. They're looking for Rashi's translation. So, Ki dativ, for I know him, literally. Leman asher yitzaves banov es beiso acharov, that he will command his children and his household after him. Vishamru derech Hashem, they will keep the way of Hashem. La'asof stako umishpat, doing charity and justice. Leman havi Hashem al Avram eis asher diber alav, in order that Hashem might then bring upon Avraham that which he had spoken of him. This is a tricky statement. Let's just go back over what's going on in this verse. Let's talk global broad strokes and let's break it down into the verse.
Well, I didn't think the angels even come.
Why are the angels even come? What,
yeah,
Avraham?
It starts with Hashem telling Abraham that he's going to have Sarah and he will have a child. Then he goes back. We go back to Hashem. Why were they even the angels there?
Yes, the angels, it seems that the angels were sent as the messengers. In other words, that Abraham wanted to have guests, so Hashem sent him guests. That's all part of that story, is in the form of the angels. And we're going to use these angels the angels are going to accomplish a lot of things at once. They're going to be the guests that Abraham's seeking. Some of them are going to tell him he's going to have a child, and some of them are going to go on to destroy Sodom. So we're going to have various roles for them.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's just break the global broad stroke of what's going to take place over these three verses, 17, 18, and 19, is we're going from the angels getting up, placing their gaze upon Sodom, and leaving. The next thing that we know they're going to do, since we've read this story before, is those angels are going to go and destroy Sodom. In these three verses, we have Hashem speaking to whom?
The angels.
Himself, the angels. There's no human on the other end of this conversation. We have a record in which the Torah tells us, so to speak, God's thought process, which is interesting. Probably a small handful of places in the entire Torah where we have such a dialogue. The first one, of course, is in the very beginning of Chumash, Nasa Adam B'Tzelmeinu, when God says to himself, let us make man. There's no person for God to speak to. He's clearly either speaking to himself or to his angels when he says, let us make man. So we have other precedent. It's not a whole lot. Here we have one in which the Torah is giving us insight, so to speak, into God's own inner dialogue, if you will. And what's the goal of this dialogue at the end of the three verses? Correct. At the end of the three verses, it seems like when the angels had originally come to visit, they did their job, they told Avraham about the child, now they get up, they're going to leave. The plan was they were going to destroy Sodom. Sodom had reached its point in which it needed to be destroyed. These angels were charged with the task of doing it. And Hashem was not going to tell Avraham. It had nothing to do with him. They were going to be destroyed. In these three verses, we have a very complicated way of saying what you or I could have said very simply of, I should tell Avraham. So in these three very complicated verses, and we'll take a look at what is Hashem's argument to himself, what we have here is the inner dialogue of God himself arguing to himself why he must tell Avraham what he's about to do. Interesting, right? Now, what does God expect from Avraham if he tells him what he's going to do? Like, why would God, and again, I'm giving broad strokes, we're going to go back. These are the questions I want us to think about when we read it. Why would God, I'm not looking at those three verses on our own, why would God tell Avraham he's about to destroy Sodom?
Because Lot is there, his family's there. Lot is there.
Okay.
No.
If that's why, and therefore what?
No.
What?
To prepare him to go and save his family, maybe.
Okay, in other words, now you're closer. In other words, God clearly had a thought process about telling Avraham. Seems like he would have done without it, and he's now making an argument to himself that I need to tell him. Why? What is it that he expects? What does he want? Just to let him know? Or does he want something? Does he expect something from him?
In the sense that Abraham's going to be the father of a great nation.
Before the verses. I don't want the verses. I want on our own logic.
Well, but he talks about doing charity.
Yeah, I don't want to ask. No. I want what? Why would God tell Avraham about Sodom? In other words, what does he want from Avraham? Okay, so why? In other words, like, come up with what possible reasons would there be that he would tell him?
Well, he would want Avraham to be angry at him after the fact. And
okay, let's put that on the table. We'll get to that. All right. It might be that he says Avraham might have some claim against me if I didn't tell him. What would be Avraham's claim if he was destroyed without his knowing?
Because Avraham does things like Hashem, kindness and justice, and he would feel that God wasn't being kind.
That's right. Okay, so there was either that, would Avraham claim that God was unjust in destroying them?
No, but he wasn't kind. Well, he wouldn't know about the justice.
Okay, so maybe unkind, maybe unjust. I think the more simple answer is, what do you have?
Well, I was thinking that maybe he was wanting to go there and have Abraham verify that there was, in fact, reason
okay.
to destroy it.
Either let him know that he could see for himself that they were evil. I think the most obvious one is probably so obvious that none of you are saying it. It could be that what he wanted was for us to do exactly what he does, which is?
Save Lot.
Not just Lot.
The whole city.
Abraham wants to save the whole city. In other words, if Hashem goes out of his way to tell Avraham that he's about to destroy Sodom, it must be because he thinks that Avraham is going to try to do something to stop him. Pray on their behalf, go there and open up an Eshet Torah center, convince him that it's not, I know something. Right? In other words, if I'm telling you, then if I feel the need to tell you, it's because either you're going to claim against me afterwards that had you known, Avram speaking, I would have something. And therefore he needs to know. So let's leave it just as broad stroke as that. In other words, the reason I'm setting this up this way is that when I go back over these three very difficult verses, it's not a simple dialogue. There are going to be a lot of question marks and rhetorical questions, and it's not going to be clear. We'll see different translations, how to read these psukim. But what we're looking for is, what is the inner dialogue of God himself? We have an insight. We have a three-verse insight into the inner dialogue of God himself. Who went through a process of, I'm not going to tell Avraham, I need to tell Avraham. If I need to tell Avraham, it's because otherwise Avraham would have something to say against me afterwards. He would say, why didn't you tell me? Had you told me, I would have something. Prayed, try to stop you, try to make them better, something. Avram, clearly, Hashem knows, at the end of this dialogue, that Avraham would have a claim of, you needed to have told me this. Because if I would have known this, I could have done something. We'll leave the something blank. We know what he is going to do. He's going to pray. But that something could have been anything. I could have opened up my Kiruv Center, but I would have done something. So God's inner dialogue is coming to the conclusion of why Abraham would have the right to make that claim. You should have told me, so that he perceives that and says, I need to tell him now. So this is going to be the inner workings of the argument why Hashem himself comes to the conclusion, I must tell Abraham. Okay, let's read it again.
Well, I think there's something telling in verse 19 where Hashem is saying that Abraham has his household after him keep the way of Hashem, doing charity and justice. So he knows. I think God's argument to himself is that Abraham sees him as a charitable and just God. So if he were to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, or Saddam, and if he were to destroy the city without telling Abraham, especially when Abraham has family in that city, then I think that would play against the charity and just character of God.
And was it not just to destroy the city?
Well, at this point, do we know that?
I'm looking at...
Would Abraham have a claim that you weren't just? Do we think that God is not being just?
Well, I mean, in Abraham's argument with God, he thought that God wasn't being just by destroying everyone.
So these are the questions I want to put on the table in terms of what is going. In other words, when God made a decision to, here we have an example of we're coming into the middle of the story, not because we didn't start from the beginning, even if we started from the beginning. What do we know about Sodom and Gomorrah at this point? Let's start there. What do we know about, we need a little bit of background. What do we know about Sodom and Gomorrah at this point in this of the Chumash?
Well, we know that, I don't know if it's this part of the Chumash, but we know that there's a lot of not really good stuff going on.
Correct. How do we know that if you flip to page 58, 59?
Well, because...
It appears in one other place.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at page 58 and 59.
Okay.
On the bottom, let's start with verse 9. This is where Abram's shepherds and Lot's shepherds get into a dispute. Abram says to Lot in verse 8, please let there be no strife between me and you, between my herdsmen and your herdsmen. Is not all the land before you? You separate. If you go right, I'll go left. You go left, I go right. Top of page 60, 61. Lot raises his eyes and saw the entire plain of the Jordan, and it was well watered everywhere before Hashem destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of Hashem, like the land of Egypt. And Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan, and journeys east. Avram dwells in the land of Canaan, while Lot dwells in the cities of the plain of the pitcher tents as far as Sodom. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and sinful toward Hashem exceedingly.
Okay.
Right? The words of the original Chumash in the Hebrew, Ro'im v'chata'im v'Hashem me'od. They were Ro'im, evil, chata'im, sinners, me'od, exceedingly.
Okay.
That's about it. Anywhere else? I think that's basically it, where we come across Sodom and Gomorrah. We have their name from the kings were seized from there, but we don't know anything about the people. So we have a one-word description of that place. Lot chooses the place, evil and wicked exceedingly. Now, the next thing we know is Hashem decides to destroy it. That's all we got about what they've done. Wicked and evil exceedingly. Do we think that God is being just or unjust in his decision to destroy them? Right? I mean, from all that we know about God, what do we know about God, right? We know a little bit about him. But if he makes the decision to destroy a city, and the only thing we know about that city is that they're exceedingly evil and wicked, I would have to be led to the conclusion that it was a just decision.
But I wonder why now?
Okay, a fair question. Yeah.
But it talks about charity and justice.
Okay, good.
And he wants, I think it's showing that he wants Abraham to see that there's not only justice, but there's got to be the balance of some charity. Because as I think about you destroy flatten the whole city, there's some children there that are not responsible for what their evil their parents did. And he's talking about flattening the whole city. Maybe there needs to be some charity.
Okay, great, great. Okay, so let's take a look at these three verses, difficult three verses. Now we have a little bit of the background of what's going on. Angels again get up, they put their gaze towards the dome, and Abram escorts them out. And now we have the following verses again. Let's just read a little bit slower through. And Hashem said, Hamechaseh ani me'Avraham asher ani oseh, shall I conceal from Avraham that which I do? Rhetorical question of, I mean, let's start from the basics. It seems like, how can I conceal from Avraham? It would be inappropriate for me to hide, to cover from Avraham that which I intend to do. I intend to destroy the city of Sodom, which technically we don't really, we only know that because of, we know the rest of the story, but at this point in the story, the text has told us, we have no idea what's about to happen. If you're reading for the first time, what's about that, we don't know. But Hashem says, should I hide from Avraham, should I cover him that which I'm going to do? And why would it be inappropriate for me to hide from Avraham, continues Hashem in his own personal thought process, because Avraham, and Avraham is surely to become a great and mighty nation. Avraham is going to become great. Let's just put a break, let's go phrase by phrase. Is the fact that Avraham is going to become a great and mighty nation in itself a reason why Avraham needs to know about the destruction of Sodom?
Yes.
Okay, I got a couple of no's, a couple of yeses, right? Let's start with the no's. Why would you say no?
It might be other great mighty nation.
Okay, it's going to be a great nation. So this city is going to be destroyed and flattened. What is the fact that Avraham is destined to become a great mighty nation have to do with the fact that this particular city is going to be destroyed? That's the simple explanation for why. Answer no. Why do you think it is relevant?
Because it's the way it's going to be destroyed. If it's going to be destroyed with some sharing.
Now, we're phrase by phrase. The fact that Avraham is going to become a mighty nation.
But because he's going to be a mighty nation, then he's the leader, and the people are going to refer back to the way he sees things and the way, sort of, a pronouncement of the way life should be. And it shouldn't be just with a heavy hand, but with some balance.
Okay, interesting. Now, the fact that he's going to be a great and mighty nation and will somehow be a leader that others will look to, therefore they're going to look at how he responded to this. Okay, now, which is a nice thought, except if you didn't know about it, so then what are they going to look to? In other words, this is the reason why Hashem feels I need to tell him in advance. But if he didn't know about it, so, interesting. All right, well, let's go there. But argument number one Hashem makes is, how can I keep this from Avraham? He is going to become a great and mighty nation. And argument number two, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by him. All the nations are eventually, right, we've seen this phrase many times, but I'll make you into a great and mighty nation, and there will bless their children through you. They're going to say, my children should be like Avraham. So those are our two arguments. Look, how could I keep this from Avraham? He's going to be a great and mighty nation, and other nations are going to bless themselves through or by him.
Well, this goes back to the relationship between Abraham and Hashem.
Okay.
I think this is a lesson.
Uh-huh, okay.
And in several ways, it says, because he commands his children and his household after him that they keep the way of Hashem. And the way of Hashem's justice is not always the same.
Okay.
So he planned to be able to learn both sides.
Okay, but going phrase by phrase, the first verse was the verse of how can I keep this from Avraham? Verse 2 seems to be the reasons. How can I keep from number 1, he's going to become a great and mighty nation. Number 2, other nations are going to bless themselves by him. I'm just pointing out, as a question on the table, that second phrase for sure, I think even the first thing. Interesting that those are the reasons why God feels he needs to tell Avraham. I just like, so why is it because other nations are going to bless themselves by him, does he need to tell Avram about the destruction of Sodom? But Hashem sees that as a significant reason why he needs to know. Let's continue. Let's just see the third verse. For I have either known him or possibly loved him, because l'man asher yitzaves banov yesbeiso achrav, because he commands his children and his household after him, shamru derech Hashem, they will keep the way of Hashem. And what is the way of Hashem that Avram is going to teach his children? La'asos tzedaka u'mishpat, doing charity and justice. L'man havi Hashem al Avraham, in order that Hashem might then bring upon Avram that which he had spoken of him. What do you make of this verse?
Well, Lot was part of his household at some point.
Okay, yeah.
And therefore he probably taught Lot to keep the way of Hashem, doing charity and justice, and all the nations of the world, if they knew that Lot was destroyed, they might think, well, what's the point of our trying to follow Abraham, if this is what happens to those that he teaches?
Okay, interesting. In other words, that people might somehow connected since Lot is in there. Now, that comment raises another interesting comment which we're going to talk about of, was it ever intended that Lot be destroyed with the city? In other words, when Avram is going to intervene unsuccessfully, is the fact that his nephew will be saved a result of his intervening, or was Lot always destined to be saved? That was never an issue.
Do we know that?
I'm leaving it on the table as we read through this to find out. I would posit at this point, he was always going to be saved. The only issue that we're seeing here is Avram trying to intervene for the rest of the city, which would then not, right, that would negate that comment. Okay, what else? Well, let's just go through the various aspects. What are the variables we see in this third verse, verse 19? What are the different components? Again, these are all reasons why Hashem feels the need to tell Avram. Number one, we see, what's the first half of the phrase?
Great mind
and action. In verse 19?
Oh, I've known him.
I've known him. Okay? Let's just put all the variables. I've known him, whether or not that means I loved him. I've known him. Clearly, those are very synonymous in the sense of I know him so well that I love him, or I love him so well that I know him. Either way, we'll talk about them more as we break this down. But another variable, notice when we add all the variables, what has Hashem said so far? He's going to be great. That's number one. Number two, and other nations will bless themselves by him. Number three is, I have an intimate relationship with him. Whether or not we use the literal translation of I know him, or whether or not it means I love him, but I personally have this intimate relationship with him. And then number four, the fourth variable that we have here is, and this might be a reason why I love him or why I know him, Abraham will command his children to follow in my ways. Right? Excellent. Right? These are all these variables here, right? He's great and mighty, or he will be great and mighty. Other nations will bless themselves with him. I have a personal, loving, intimate relationship with him. Because, I'm not sure if it's because it's going back on all those first three of great nations, or just the fact that I love him. But because, and what has Abram done to earn the status of being a great and mighty nation, that other nations should bless themselves, this intimate level of relationship with Hashem, what has he done to earn that? Because he teaches his children and his children's children, which he, again, at this point in the story, how many children does Abram have?
Not at this point in the story?
Yeah.
Really?
He has Yishmael.
He has Yishmael. He's already born by this?
Yes, because this is after the circumcision, right?
Okay.
So now, but is Ishmael the subject of the children and children's children that Hashem is speaking about here?
No.
No, absolutely not. No. So Hashem is saying, because I know he commands, present tense, Asher Yitzav is born of his Beso Acharav, which really doesn't even exist. Yitzchak isn't even born. But Abraham, I guess, will teach his children and his children's children to follow in my ways. And what are my ways?
Charity and justice.
Right? So now there are many ways of God. What are the two ways that God points out here relevant to our story? Charity and justice, which are interesting traits which we're going to have to talk about how those two things go together. Now when you think about the word for charity, tzedakah, tzedek, means, charity is an interesting translation, but it also means righteousness.
Holy.
And tzedek is actually, tzedek is to run after judgment or justice. One could have translated it staka and mishpat as like righteousness or justice and judgment. So staka, there are two phrases we're going to talk a lot about, the phrases of staka and mishpat. Here, our school translates it as charity and justice. These are clearly two traits which are relevant to what's going on at hand, which is the destruction of Sodom. But because Avram is going to teach his children in these two traits of staka and mishpat, therefore, I have to tell him. Now, there's one other phrase we have here at the end of this dialogue that Hashem has with himself, and that is, in order that Hashem might bring upon Avram that which he had spoken of him. So where does that fit? Meaning that Avraham will keep, or Avram will teach his children and his grandchildren to go in my ways of staka and mishpat. Why will Avraham teach his children to go in the ways of staka? In order that I fulfill my promise to him of all of these great blessings. And therefore, since that I should fulfill my promise to him, Avram will teach his children and grandchildren to follow my ways of staka and mishpat, righteousness and justice, or charity and justice, I'm going to leave those untranslated. Therefore, I have an intimate relationship with him. He will be a great and mighty nation. Other nations will bless themselves by him. And after all of that, therefore, what's the sum total conclusion? I have to tell him what I'm about to do. Very interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So I'll have to see what really was in here. All of these different variables, I guess we can count up five different elements of Hashem's argument to himself, which net the result of I must tell him. Meaning, and if I didn't tell him, he would have some type of claim against me because of these reasons. He would say, but I'm going to be a great and mighty nation. But other nations are going to bless themselves with me. I'm going to teach my children to go in your way so that you can fulfill your promises to me. We have this intimate relationship. You have to have told me this. And I, therefore, have complaints. Seemingly because Avram's complaint would be, had you told me, I could have done something. To preempt that, all of these variables come into play, and God therefore concludes to himself, I, on my own, will preempt that and tell him in advance. Now, we can ask a great theological question, which I'll ask. I don't know what we'll come across, but I'll ask the theological question. If God already made the decision to destroy Sodom,
why have this conversation with himself?
Let's flesh that out. Whatever he thinks that Avram's claim against him would be, Avram's claim would have been, I could have done something. God in his infinite wisdom knows whatever Avram's claim could have been and has decided that it's not correct, worthy, whatever. Because what was his decision?
To
do it, to destroy them. I'm just working out the theological question of, I made the decision to destroy them. I have here a bunch of variables, which we just went through. He's going to be a great nation. Other nations are going to bless themselves. Okay. Therefore, I need to tell them. Because if I didn't tell them, Avram would say, how come he didn't tell me? If he would have told me, I would have been able to do. So, and then God thinks what? And then he knows that, do it anyway, he made that decision. What did he think that Avram would be able to say to him that he didn't already know and take into account when he decided to destroy them? That would be the theological question as to what was going on. What are we going to learn from this when Hashem comes to the conclusion of, I must tell him, and Avram's going to go through the process that he's going to go through? There's going to be what for us to learn as we have to deal with this dialogue that's taking place and the conversation that's going to ensue. Yeah.
Well, any time that God does something that involves us, it's for our being able to learn something.
Okay, great. Right.
And this goes back to the relationship between God and Abraham and solidifying that relationship. And God knows what's going to happen. God knows exactly how it's going to turn out, but if he doesn't confide in Abraham what he's about to do, then how can I articulate this? And that's going to impact the trust that Abraham has in,
okay.
in whatever.
A new variable that you're introducing, I'll put it on the table,
okay.
that is not what I have been leading you along, which had something to do with the lines of Abram would have had claims of, I could have done something. That would be a new variable of, there's just some type of a relationship that's been violated. Now that's an interesting point, that they would have that kind of relationship. But it's one thing for a husband to say to his wife, you mean you bought a new car and didn't consult me? Like, where is the trust? Like, how does that work? How could you do something like that and not tell me? That would be putting the relationship of Avram and Hashem on a new level of God-human, and human would have the claim of, how can you have done this and not told me? Not because I would have stopped it, just, how could you do this without telling me? Now, I think it's a fair thing to put on the table. If we'll go back to the first two variables of Avram becoming a great nation and other nations blessing themselves with him, which one of you mentioned was, I'm responsible for these people. Then it's not just, I thought we had a relationship where we shared everything, right? Avram doesn't have that kind of relationship. Nobody does. Like, I thought we shared things. What do you mean? I'm God. You're a person. I don't have to share things with you. But if you made me responsible for all of these people, then how can you punish my children and not telling me?
Right.
Now that's a fair thing. We'll leave that on the table as well. As part of, when we go through all the variables that Hashem said to himself, which we had like five different points in his argument why I need to tell him, and the first two of Avram's going to become a great nation, and other nations are going to bless themselves through him, that might be part of that of how can I punish his children, so to speak, that he's responsible for on some level without letting him know. Not necessarily where that I've been saying it in the sense of, and he would have a claim against me that he could have done something, but just in the sense of, you have to tell me before, like, that's just not, it's not, I don't know, fair, it's not right. I'm responsible for them as well. That's another aspect, yeah.
Does it go too far back to say it has something to do with man's wisdom and free will, freedom of choice, that God has given us wisdom, he's given us free choice, and if he just says, well, I'm just going to do it anyway, you don't even have to be involved in it, you know, I'll just go about and just rule everything.
No, because the free choice isn't affecting Avram. In other words, he could have destroyed it and wouldn't have impacted his free choice, and he wouldn't have known about it. So, I mean, once he tells Avram, then he brings it into Avram's realm of free choice in terms of how Avram will respond. But if he would have not told him, then it would have just circumvented that whole issue. Yeah.
I keep being puzzled if there's any meaning to, when we went back and looked on page 6061,
uh-huh.
and it said the Jordan, you know, was well watered everywhere before Hashem destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah.
Okay.
It's not often in the Torah that it mentions before something.
Right.
We don't say the Sea of Reeds was the beautiful
right.
river before.
Right. It's as if the Torah is saying, you, the reader, are going to say the entire plain of Jordan was well watered. It's a destroyed. There's nothing that can grow there. So it's sort of like foreshadowing, even though it hasn't even happened yet. That's because I'm describing something before the destruction took place. That's an interesting point. Yeah. Okay. Now, I wanted to add one other point to the last point that was said about Avram, if he had some level of responsibility for these people. Let's add two points, actually. Number one, how long has Abraham at this point now known about the evilness of the ways of the people of Sodom? It seems like it's been going on for a while. Right, when Lot chooses that place to live, the Torah tells us that the place there were evil and wicked in the eyes of God exceedingly. Seems like that was known. It was not the Torah telling us, the reader, that, but Avram and Lot didn't know that. It seems like that was well known at the time. So Avram has known about the wickedness of the people of Sodom. What has he done about that until this point? It's probably not his issue. He hasn't. It seems like we're not told about him doing anything about that as far as that goes. Now, I've mentioned the theological issue of the argument that God might have made, like, if he's already made the decision, so we could assume that it's a righteous and just decision, if he made it, to destroy them, yet Avram still seems to think he might have had some type of a claim. If he's responsible for them, we'll have another aspect of the claim of a father towards his children type claim, which is not coming from righteousness, it's coming more just from compassion, you just can't. Just don't do it. Not because it's not right or just because I'm begging you, don't do it. So we'll see all these variables as to what's going on. But that's the dialogue that's taking place. Let's read a little bit more, far ahead of time. Verse 20. Vayomer Hashem, so Hashem said, who did he say this to? Not sure, it doesn't say. Vayomer Hashem, so Hashem, the reason I was, right, the last person, who was the last speaker in verse 17?
Hashem.
Right, who is he speaking to there?
We don't know. We think he's either talking to himself or the angel.
Right, clearly one of those two, because there's no human on the other end of that conversation, that's for sure. So verse 17 starts with Hashem Amar, Hashem said. Now verse 20 says again, Vayomer Hashem, and Hashem said. Doesn't say to who. What does he say? Zaakat Sodom va'amora ki rabo. The outcry of Sodom and Amora has become great. V'chat osam ki chovdo me'od. And because of their sin has become very grave, very heavy, literally. Erdona ve'ereh. I will descend and see. Haketzakosa havo'o elai osu kala. And see if they act in accordance with its outcry which has come to me. And if so, kala, destruction. V'imlo eida'a. If not, I will know. Now, if I would have permission to say so, I would say this is a very strange set of two psukim. We just spent a long time on the first three verses. What was the outcome of those three-verse dialogue that Hashem had with himself?
He decided to tell Abraham.
What did he decide to tell Abraham?
He's
going to destroy. That's what it seemed, right? Now, he didn't actually say that. He just said, shall I conceal from Avram what I do, now that Avram, right? Now, what we would expect to then see is Hashem telling Avram something. What do we see?
God's checking it out.
Yeah. Like, wait a minute, I thought he made a decision already, and he just was describing to himself that it's not right that I don't tell Avram what I'm going to do. Although maybe we jump to a conclusion. How do we know what he was planning on doing? All that he says is, I can't conceal from Avram what I do. Well, what was he about to do?
Sure.
Didn't say that anywhere.
Send the angels to the city.
Right? It doesn't actually say anywhere at this point that he was planning it. It just says, I can't hide from what I'm about to do. Which is what? Well, now we have in verse 20, 21, it's as if he's deciding now what he's going to do. And he says, we don't know to who yet, so Hashem said, well, the outcry of Sodom and Amor has become very great. Their sin is very grave. I will descend and see if they act in accordance with the outcry that has come to me, destruction. If not, I will know. What will he know?
Whether or not to destroy, but it's too wicked to pass.
Whether they change their way.
No.
Okay. So, any other one else? So, very interesting two psukim over here. Who is the outcry coming from?
The people of Sodom.
Right? Sounds like they're the people of Sodom and Amorah who are calling out. So, should they be destroyed with their perpetrators?
Well, that's the argument that comes up later between God and Abraham.
No, not necessarily. I was looking for righteous people. There are some people who are the cause of the outcry. What about the phrase of I will descend and see?
What about it?
All right, so we have to, there's another phrase. Notice, technically speaking, theologically speaking, what does it mean that God says I will descend and see? He doesn't need to descend and see. He can see from wherever he is. Where do we have the phrase before?
He's sending his angels to make the determination.
No, okay, maybe yes, maybe no. Oh, I'm not so sure about that just yet. Where else do we see the phrase, I will descend and see?
In the Garden of Eden.
And, I don't think so.
I give up.
The Tower of Babel. As they begin to build a tower, God says, mm-hmm. Same phrase, I will descend and see what it is that the sons of man are up to. So we have here a similar phrase of I will descend and see what it is that they're doing. If so, destruction. If not, then I will know. I will know what? I will know that, I guess, that they're not acting in accordance with the outcry that has come to me. I'm getting an outcry. I need to check out whether or not it's actually what it seems to be. If so, destruction. If not, then I will know. Interesting way of saying I won't destroy them. If not, I will know that, I guess, the outcry is not as bad as what's actually coming to me. Who is Hashem speaking to? We'll have to see. We will have to see. Okay. We'll call it here for today, and we'll pick up Mirtz Hashem next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the Donate link. Thank you very much.